Welcome to Rise Above the Ashes podcast, where we break down the art of failure and learn why multiple failures equals true success if you just don't give up. In this podcast, we go deep with our guests to find out how they overcome some of the greatest obstacles in their lives and what makes them tick as a human being. Learn here how you can turn your failures into true success. Welcome, everybody. In this episode, I have my wife, Tiffany Thompson, here. How you doing, Tiffany?
Great.
Good, good. I asked you here specifically because we wanted to talk to the audience about our real estate, where we've been, where we've gone, where we're going, and so on and so forth. So why don't you tell me where we've been in the past? Where do we come from? Or I mean, we didn't both come from the same place, but we kind of did. But you tell your side of the story and then I'll interject. And if you have any questions for me, feel free to ask as well. But this is your story. This is Tiffany's story. So tell us where you've been in your past and where you are now. And let's just let the natural state flow.
So when you mean past, you mean how I was raised, when I was raised?
Yeah. How were you raised?
I was raised probably, if someone asked me, I guess you're asking me, more on the poverty side. We didn't have much. My sister and I shared a room all growing up in a trailer. We didn't need anything, but we didn't have everything. So it was very much whatever we needed, we got, but we didn't necessarily get everything we wanted. We sacrificed a lot because my mom wanted to be home instead of being a working mom. So, I mean, they sacrificed a lot because of that, but we also had my mom there the entire time. We just grew up from poverty. We didn't have much. We didn't really miss out on much either, I don't think.
Yeah. What kind of work did your mom and dad, well, you said your mom didn't do anything necessarily, but what kind of work did your dad do?
He did like HVAC. What would you call it? Like a mechanic.
Yeah.
HVAC mechanic. Technician for big corporation companies.
Yeah. So coming out of a background like that to now you're the number one real estate agent in Heritage Oaks Real Estate, a realty. And that was a company that I formerly owned. I sold it to my business partner, Rusty. And he's done some amazing things. But out of what, 70-something agents, you are leading the most volume. And money basically isn't an issue nowadays. So what does that look like for you going from A to Z over the years?
It's a little surreal. Like sometimes I just have to pinch myself. Like, how did I get there from A to Z? Like I've been growing up not having much at all. And now, you know, blessed beyond measure and having abundance. Of course, there's a lot of work in between, but I just feel extremely blessed to have the opportunity. And that people see that inside of me, that they want to entrust me with their properties and their most valuable assets, pretty much.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I wanted you here was to basically tell your story. I'll fill in the gap so that you can know where to go. Because we haven't planned this, people. We have not planned this. We just threw this right on the whim.
And, very impromptu.
Very impromptu. We just figured out we were going to do this like 5 minutes ago. But with that said, you know, we got married young. We had a pop-up wedding in a small church. Both of our families come from, the poverty side. My parents moved up to lower middle class. Your parents kind of stayed up and around that state of low income earning. But they're great, loving parents. They're good people. Never lacked for anything. Neither have I. But with that said, we got to the point where we got married young and we started working. You were retired from your admin job at a metal company within, 9 to 10 months after I got into real estate. And we had a baby. You were raising our baby for a couple of years. Then you decided to assist me in real estate. And why don't you start from there? How was that going from poverty to getting married to quitting your job, retiring, raising a kid? Because we had our kid in the first year of us being married. So we got married at 19 and 20 years old. So by 20 and 21, we had our first daughter, Caitlin. You're kind of the stay-at-home mom. I'm in and out doing sales. Next thing you know, she's in school a couple of years later and you go back to work and you're doing real estate. We're making a little bit of money. And what took place in your mind? Why did you want to go into real estate? Other than me probably pushing it on you.
I just felt like it complemented each other. Like we worked really good with each other. So I was just thinking, well, how can I help? Because I'm not the type of person that wants to sit at home and be the stay-at-home mom. I'm not that type of person that just is okay with doing the laundry, okay with cleaning the house, okay with cooking. That's great for people that loves that, but that's just not me. So I wanted to put my hands to something. You were doing real estate. You needed help. And I just thought, why not? Why not give it a try and then eventually go back and get my real estate license so I could call myself, oh, I'm the agent. I'm not the assistant anymore. I'm the actual agent on file. I have my name to things and it's not just working under Brandon Thompson. Yeah. So that's when I went and got my license so I could, you know, be my own self, be my own person as a realtor.
Yeah. What I think is funny is when I was working as a real estate agent prior to the recession, I was the number one agent in the real estate business. Now, at that point, after losing everything in 2008, which we'll go into in a few minutes, but surpassing that and starting my own brokerage up in 2009, let's say, I was the broker and I kind of walked away from being a real estate agent as a career. And then we started our own firm, raised up a few people, ended up selling the company to one of the guys that I taught. And now we both hold our license under his firm. But I find it funny that you're the number one agent now out of everybody. So I was the number one agent. Now you're the number one agent currently. How is that possible?
I haven't thought about that. That's actually quite funny.
Yeah.
Maybe because I learned from the best. Not really sure.
Hey, she said
maybe.
It, not me. So
maybe
there you
so.
Go. Kudos. Yeah. I think, I think it's it is surreal. We both come from, I guess you could say poverty. I think my family had a little bit more money or so than yours, but we're here now. And, you know, some people may just say, oh, well, I just want to retire and give up. But, you know, we've made a few million dollars and, you know, we're not giving up. We're not going to go sit on a beach and, you know, sip on pina coladas every day, which we could have. Yeah. I mean,
that
think
sounds nice.
It does sound nice a year later. Nice. We should have done that a year later, a year ago, but we're working more than we ever have for some reason. We choose to, really. I mean, that's the thing, we choose to. But with that said, I guess where I'm going with this is, why would we choose to?
Because we're busybodies. We don't want to sit at home. We're not the type of person that just sits around and lets time go by. We have to get stuff done and we have lots of goals and dreams that we want to accomplish before we don't get to enjoy them anymore.
Before we croak.
Well, I wasn't going to say that, but you know.
Yeah. What about, so let's take it back a notch. Let's go back a few years. We built up a career. I was coaching investors earlier, I guess in the early 2000s up until, you know, the recession. And, you know, I was also a loan officer. And a lot of the magic behind the scenes was you, you know, doing the admin work behind the scenes. And I actually had my sister working for a little while. My mom was working for a little while. You were working. And all that stuff behind the scenes didn't come magically. There's systems to becoming the number one agent. And obviously, you've got an assistant now and things like that. And so on and so forth. So there's a team behind the scenes. And, you know, if we didn't have our team, I wouldn't say we would be successful as we are. But at the same time, you know, we put a lot of pressure on ourselves. And I know you do too. With that said, I know I'm all over the place, but bringing it back again to the recession, you know, prior to the recession, teaching and training investors, number one agent. And then we built up and, you know, we're both in this thing together. We're doing it together. We built up from me being 20 to 21. I'm sorry, 20 to 22 and you from 19 to 21, we bought 20 rental properties and then we started flipping 10 to 15 homes. And then we were teaching and training investors how, you know, and collectively I'm saying we, because Tiffany's a big part of it. We were teaching people how to do real estate. We were taking them, you know, to get hard money financing. We're helping them learn construction. We were selling the houses for them and getting a commission. We were renting out the houses for them if they wanted to keep it. And we were also refinancing it if they wanted to use something like a BRRRR method, which is basically buy, renovate, rent out, refinance, and repeat. And we were doing that. And we were teaching people how to do that. And then, you know, we were on top of the world. We were, you know, mid, late 20-year-old kids that were probably making a couple hundred thousand dollars a year, had a 4,000 square foot golf course house, some nice vehicles. Well, we didn't really go on vacation much, which was odd because we like traveling now. But then we lost everything. You know, we're just busybodies. You know, we're raising our kids. We had our second daughter, Sadie. And like you said, we were busybodies. And then we lose everything. That was pretty interesting. So I remember what happened, but why don't you tell us what happened when I called you up that day after that final blow from the bank?
From what I remember, because I kind of block it out because it's not a very happy moment. But I believe when you called, you were like, "Tiffany, we are penniless. It just happened. They just ripped every single cent from our account. I'm not sure what to do. Not sure what to have. But it's going to happen. But it's all gone." And I was in the kitchen, just kind of like hanging out with the children, trying to figure things out, and just broke down. I just didn't know what to do. And it was just scary. It was really scary to know what the next step was going to be. What it looked like, you know. It was just heart-wrenching.
Yeah, well, what happened was, I'll make a long story short without going into too many of the details, but we were over-leveraged and the market was shrinking and everybody was getting scared in the financial realm back in 2008 and 2007, 2008. And then by the time 08 hit, homes weren't selling anymore and we were in the flipping business. And prior to the recession, there were these banks, these local community banks, which don't exist anymore. They're all nationally. They're all national banks now, but they were giving a 20-something-year-old kid 100% financing. So I had no skin in the game. So a lot of the stuff that they were doing, which, you know, I learned a lot in construction and flipping and sales through that day, but I didn't really learn a lot in finances, which we didn't really learn a lot in finances. We knew how to spend well and we knew how to make money well, but we didn't know how to cash flow. So income's coming in, income's going out. Shout out to my friend, Mike King. I just met at Chris Harder's Elite Mastermind. But he had taught a lesson on gross revenue, gross profit, net profit, and then cash. Problem was, we didn't have any freaking cash. You know, we were spending as much as we were earning. And then we had all of these houses over leveraged and there was no equity in them. And then by the time, or there might've been like 5 to 10% equity. I think they allowed us to refinance some up to 100%. Maybe as low as 90%. You know, we could have done the 75%, the 80%, but we wanted to cash out. We had learned on this method of refinancing, getting cash, put in your pocket, and you don't have to pay taxes on it because it's a real estate strategy. So you can refinance your property, you put the money in your pocket, you don't have to pay taxes on it. Well, we thought that was smart back in the day, but we we're over leveraged. We didn't have any equity. And then the market crashed. And then we lose 50% in equity overnight. It really hit hard in Georgia, just like it did everywhere else in every state. But some states lost a little bit more equity. Some states lost less. But we lost about 50 cents on a dollar. So now we had negative equity in houses like we did in cars. And I had to go talk to the bankers. So went to talk to the bankers and they did not want to give us extensions. They did not want to give us any help. And I tried to work with them. And they said, "Well, you got 30 days to pay." And we tried to refinance them. They're again, self-employed. Even the conventional mortgage lenders did not want to refinance somebody in a doom and gloom economy. So we go in to go. I go back to the local community banks, try to talk to them. And a couple of them said they would work with us, but a couple of them found out that they had our personal mortgage, that we had paid down a $250,000 home at the time, down to $7,000. They had that first promissory note and they had our other investment properties as well as our own operating account was there in that bank. So they knew they had leverage. They had a really expensive house that was paid down in equity. They had a sizable bank account and they had properties that we couldn't pay off. So what do they do? They say, "Screw you guys. We're going to take you for everything you got. We're going to call your personal home note due. We're going to take all the money out of your bank account through cross-collateralization clauses. We're going to push all that equity and all that money into the homes that you cannot pay. And we're going to call all of the notes due all across the board, take all your money, and you're going to be penniless. And we're going to slap you with judgments because you know you're foreclosing on you and you can't pay. So I call you up. I tell you all this. And basically, you knew it. I didn't have to say all that because you knew what was going on. But I say that. We're penniless. We're broke. I come home. And then what happens? That was a long narrative just to get there. But I think the audience had to understand because where we go next is pretty interesting.
You pretty much collapsed in the living room floor. And I think you just felt helpless and defeated and beat up and discouraged and lost all hope. It was frightening.
Yeah.
I'd never seen you in that state before.
Have I ever been in that state since?
No. Thank you, Lord.
I do get into very anxiety states and pissed off states. And sometimes I get into fits and rages. I kind of have closet Tourette syndrome. For some reason, if my freaking iPhone doesn't work, I'm like, fuck. So, you know, that happens very often more than not. But anyways, I was in a helpless state. But what did you do? What was in your mind at that point? This episode's about you, even though I'm kind of, Tiffany's shy, so I'm helping her narrate the story. So that she can give you guys the best answers that she can, because she's not used to this. She didn't even want to do this episode, just so you guys know. But what was there? What was in your mind when I collapsed and I'm crying and I'm sitting there in the fetal position, almost sucking my thumb like a little whiny baby?
So I knew I had to be the strong one there because you were being the weak. Of course, you know, we can't both be weak. One of us has to be strong. So I had to be the strong one in that situation or that current state of mind that you were in. And all I could do was just, you know, speak positive and speak life and just know that somehow, some way, we'll get back on top. Whatever that looks like. It may not have been, you know, what we had before, but we would get through it together, no matter what.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I'm having flashbacks. A little PTSD all of a sudden.
Well, I'm trying to like vision like, you know, what we really did go through and what we felt and the emotions behind it.
Yeah. Well, we'll skip. So shortly after that, we knew that we were losing everything. We had to go talk to an attorney. And, you know, funny thing is we talked to an attorney before, the attorney we hired, and they had ties with the banks. And they're like, oh, yeah, this is a conflict of interest. We can't represent you. I'm like, what the hell are we dealing with? Are we dealing with the mafia? Like, I was freaking out. I saw a lot of mob movies growing up and Godfather and this and that. I'm thinking I'm having visions of freaking horse heads, you know, thrown in my bed or somebody's going to gut us. But throughout that process, you know, we had to go. Here's the funny part. Right after this, you know, we had to go talk to all of our renters and we, you know, at 20 rental properties, like I said. So we had to go talk to these people and tell them that we want to do right by you. We don't want to be the slum, you know, lord that is just pocketing all your rent money, you know, taking all your rent money and pocketing it. And then next thing you know, you guys are being booted out from the sheriff's office without any notice. So why don't you guys just stop paying us rent? And from there, you know, you can stay there until they kick you out, because we knew we were losing everything. Like, we just didn't want to take their money. We wanted them to have time and so on. But that was pretty interesting. That was, I guess, the character that we had at the time. We could have easily pocketed that money. We could have probably put, you know, over several months, probably $30,000, $40,000 in our pocket, but we did not want to. Why would we do that?
Why wouldn't we do that?
Or why wouldn't we do that? I'm sorry.
Because it would be the wrong thing to do.
Yeah.
We're not the people.
Yeah.
We would have rather have wanted them to save that money to put towards another house that they're going to have to move into eventually when they get evicted.
Yeah. Yeah.
Payments and moving costs. It wouldn't be fair.
Yeah. So we love people and we want to, you know, bless them and so on. But I think after that, we ended up renting a house from a friend and then we started all over. For me, I didn't want to be in sales. I didn't want to see people. I'm like, I'm giving up on people. I was broke down. Where were you at mentally at that point when we moved to Douglasville and, you know, shit hit the fan and we're penniless overnight?
Crap really did hit the fan. Like, just trying to remember all the things that we had to do.
Tell them about your Explorer.
I had to park my car in the garage to hide it from
Repo man.
Yeah, the repo person.
Yeah.
Because they would drive in the cul-de-sac every night waiting for my car to be outside of the garage because I can't physically get it out of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to park inside the garage. I was always wondering, like, are they going to steal it while I'm at the grocery store? Are they going to take it from me if I'm going to Target or to Walmart? I'm just, like, wondering one day. I'm going to walk out to that parking lot and the car is going to be gone.
I remember us looking through the windows and that guy sat in our driveway for like 3 hours because he saw it in the garage, but he can't legally go in the garage and steal it. So he's just waiting for us. We're just staring out the windows and we're like, we're not leaving.
That's one of the worst feelings.
That is
one of the worst feelings that one day you're not going to have your car anymore.
Yeah. And you know, that's how you make money because we're in, even though we're, you know, we stopped flipping houses and whatever, we're still in real estate because we recreated ourselves. I think I sold Clear, an internet company back in the day, a product like Wi-Fi or whatever. And you were doing broker priced opinions for the banks. And then eventually we got to the point where we started our own brokerage because it just wasn't enough. So we're like, oh, let's just go into property management and rent houses out for people. And you continue to do BPOs. But that thing was our method of transportation, your car and my car. And granted, these weren't actually, and granted, your car was a good car. I bought a piece of crap Expedition that could blow up at any day. And your Explorer was the car that was the nice one that wasn't going to die. And they're trying to steal it away from us. So that
was... Exactly. It was our livelihood.
Yeah, I mean...
Literally. And we had to drive to go to do our broker price opinions. And that was... I mean, that's nothing but driving.
What's a broker priced opinion for those people that don't know?
It's pretty much a short version of an appraisal on a property.
Yeah. Yeah. So banks and real estate agents... banks and a financial institution hire real estate agents to basically give them a cheap appraisal because they're too cheap to hire an appraiser. So we give them a short form appraisal versus a long form appraisal. And they pay us like anywhere, we used to do this. We don't do it anymore, but they would pay us like $50 to $100 where an appraiser's going to charge $350 to $500. So they're trying, you know, had so many foreclosures back in the day, they were hiring agents to do it versus appraisers because they wanted to be cheap bastards.
Pretty much.
So what happens after, so now we're coming into, let's just say 2011, we start flipping homes, you know, I start the private capital business, we have our brokers, just got a few agents, we're starting to make a little bit of money, not a lot of money, but we're probably making $100,000 a year, which might be a lot of money to some people, but we were very smart about saving the money at that point. We weren't overspending. And then we had some friends that were trying to push us to travel and stuff like that. And we didn't really want to. We wanted to be tight, stingy Jews. Not that there's anything wrong with Jews. I like Seinfeld. So I always say not that there's anything wrong with it or anything at all. But anyways, with that said, what was in your mindset when we were finally like, maybe we owe ourselves after a little bit of hard work, after flipping houses, losing everything, maybe we owe it to ourselves to go travel and to go spend a little money on ourselves. What was that like for you?
I'm assuming you're talking about our trip to Dominican Republic?
I don't know. I think our friends Ryan and Amanda tried to push us to go to Florida or something like that at the time, and I just didn't want to do it. Or
well, that's when we didn't have any money.
Oh, yeah, yeah. They paid for it. We gave them a check, and they paid for it. And you know, I looked like 2 or 3 weeks later, like, why haven't you guys cashed our check? And they're like, oh, don't worry about it. I'm like, wow. That was definitely heartwarming for me.
We didn't pay for that trip. We didn't have the money.
Thanks, Ryan and Amanda, in case you're listening. Okay. I think the trip after that, our actual first trip wasn't Dominican Republic. It was going to New Orleans. We took our kids to New Orleans on a train ride from Georgia to New Orleans. Because we're being cheap. We didn't want to travel. We didn't want to go international. We were scared. And so we did the poor man's trip. We didn't even want to get on a plane. So we did that, and that was kind of fun.
It was fun.
Kind of stressful with babies on a train.
Yeah, I was going to say, it was fun and a little stressful. 14-hour train ride with a 2-year-old. It was a little stressful.
And then you go down to Bourbon Street. Like somehow we were close to Bourbon Street. We go to a hotel. Somebody had just gotten shot right there around the corner from us, and then we walk down Bourbon Street, and next thing you know, you got strippers and this and that, like going on. We're straddling our babies. Like we were naive and didn't know, we were ignorant to the world. Like, what the heck were we thinking?
Closing their eyes every corner. I'm like, please don't look.
Yeah. Yeah. So it was quite funny.
It was funny.
And then, you know, from there we started, we got back, we started making more money. My private capital firm was taking off. You were, you know, getting licensed and you started selling. And
I think we started feeling more on top of the world. Like we had control over our finances that we have actually beat the stricken of losing everything.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, you know, I think the, you know, people are they think that money is the root of all of evil, but like the Bible says, the root of all evil is the love of money. You know, love of money is the root of all evil. I can't say we love money. I think I have the love of the art of making money, but we give away money and we don't really necessarily love money. But I will say this, when we didn't have money to when we do have money, life is a whole lot easier when you have money versus when you're broke, busted and disgusted.
It is. It is easier. But I don't want people to get mistaken that we do love money. I think you, in particular, love the idea of making money and how you can make money in different ways and different avenues. And I think you just love, like you said, you love the art and the science of making money and how much you can make and how, you know, what you can do with that money. Not just for yourself, but for others.
Yeah. I think, you know, we're always our worst critics. I'm always thinking like, I can do more. Do you ever ask yourself that question?
Or are you just content? I can do more.
Yeah. Or are you just content where hey, I'm cool.
I'm more of the I'm cool person. And you're more like, oh, I can do so much more. Yeah. And I see myself riding your coattails a lot. And then just kind of like, well, I guess that's why God made us to be together because you're the more driven person and I'm the more, I'll take the back seat and just ride along.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm like, oh shoot, man, we're not doing enough. Like this is ridiculous. I don't know how to be content. Honestly, I finally, I think after going to this mastermind last week, I'm like, I just need to start being grateful for where we're at. Cause I am personally not a grateful person. I don't know why I'm thankful, but am I grateful? My favorite word Tiffany hates is fuck no, I'm not grateful. And that's an honest truth and it's a problem, but, it really is a problem, but I'm learning. And, you know, Chris actually had something, or one of the speakers there had something that says, who are some of your heroes? And I actually put you down.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, because you're loving and you're grateful. And I'm like, golly, if I could just be more like that, that'd be awesome.
More like me.
Yeah.
Oh.
Patient. Patient is a virtue and I don't have any at all. I freaking hate things when they go wrong, you know, or when they, you know, push me up against the wall. And I'm like, and like I said, I got closet Tourette syndrome. Like all the explicatives start flying out of me. Those of you that don't know this, now you finally know it. Brandon cusses like a sailor and it's not a good thing, but I'm going to be open and vulnerable and just say, fuck it. So, shit, Tiffany's like flinching over there. That little thing, that thing is like coming, like wanting to stab me right now. But anyway, so what's the, I'm making this about me a little bit. I ain't trying to do that. I always do that. But what do you feel like now that you started making money, now that, you know, we had an 11-year partnership with some wonderful people. We did really, really good things together. And now we're 2 years out of that. And we're operating on our own. Last year, we did like right at 50 houses. We flipped 50 houses. We bought, I mean, we're going on our fourth short-term vacation rental. We bought our first rental property since our partnership with one of my friends. And now that we're off on our own, we're doing our own thing. Like, how's that going?
I think it's great. Yeah. I mean, I was a little scared at first because we had never done this kind of load of work before on our own and how we would manage. But I think we're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
I think so.
What do you mean well?
We're doing pretty good. It's a little stressful.
Oh, work is.
But as long as you keep a focus on what your goals are and not get carried away and not get too many things that you're committed to and can't follow through. Yeah. That's my worry.
Yeah. Are you talking to me or are you talking to you?
I'm talking to you.
Okay. All right. Well, what do you think? How are you the number one agent? So you're an implementation person. You're very admin and task oriented, and I like throwing stuff on the wall to see what sticks. Like Tiffany will, you know what makes us perfect as far as a sales couple. I do a lot of marketing and a big voice on this side of town. I don't do any of the sales if I don't have to. You know, I'm focusing on our flips and looking for our short-term vacation rentals and running our contractors and our teams. And Tiffany does all that stuff. So if I pull in a lead, Tiffany takes it from A to B to B to Z, and I don't have to do anything, which is great. But how do you go from B to Z and bring in, $250,000 a year? That's what she didn't make exactly that, but she brought in just on her own probably $200,000 last year as a real estate agent, like in a cheap side of town, over there in California. Anybody listening, that might equivalent to maybe $700,000 a year. So she's a powerhouse on this side of town. So we're in Georgia, cost of living's cheap, and cost of living's cheap and housing's cheaper. So how do you do that?
It's a lot of work. And I have my assistant now that helps me keep things in line. But for the most part, I think it's just communication. I'm constantly on my phone, constantly texting, constantly emailing myself to remind myself to do things. It's just staying on top of everything and not letting anything fall through the cracks.
Yeah.
Or dropping balls. Because personally, I can't handle the thought of anybody dropping a ball and my name being attached to that.
Yeah.
So that's just important to me, that great communication and being on top of everything.
Well, you can't do that without systems. I'm sure you have flow charts or spreadsheets and things like that. Has your assistant or anybody dropped the ball on you and made you look bad? Call them out right now. It doesn't matter.
I'm trying to think. I think there's been one little instance, but I just profusely apologized to the agent and it was totally fine.
How do you discipline the assistant, somebody that we care for and somebody that cares for us, and talk to them? Like, you messed up. We need to better this. Let's move on.
Well, in this situation, she already knew that she messed up. She called me right as it happened. So I didn't really have to reprimand or anything. She felt just as bad. Like, I didn't have to say anything. It was just already there. Well, just felt terrible and we moved on. It wasn't a big deal.
Well, those are the best humans, the people that are willing to admit their failures and their mistakes, and then just come over to you and grovel a little bit, say, hey, I wronged, I'm sorry. Then you just move forward. I mean, like my handyman, he's been doing some sloppy work lately, and I'm like, before I even said anything, I was thinking about saying something to him. I'm like, dude, you need to slow down and really go. Yeah, even if it takes an extra day or two to get the job done, don't run through it. I know it's 30 tasks and you want to run through it and you want to move on to the next property, but go through it. And he actually came to me before I said something to him. I'm like, dude, that's freaking leadership right there. Like, you know, he will be a leader of people essentially one of these days. So again, for your assistant as well, that's the best people, I believe. And that's who I like to work with. I like to work with people that are always trying to grow and do better, and it's the people that don't care and are complacent that aren't willing to dream or do better. That's the people I don't enjoy being around, but I don't know about you, but it's awesome that you got a good assistant and good people that work for you. I guess the other thing is, so you like travel. So what do you want to do? What do you want to do when you grow up?
Travel. The world. I want to see the world.
All right. So people that are listening, help us figure out how to monetize travel so Tiffany can realize her dream.
That's my true joy. My true passion is to travel. But I also have, like, in my mind, I feel like I have to make money to justify all this travel that I want to do. So I don't know what that looks like.
We don't go on cheap trips either. We're like, no. I mean, you know, you're dropping $50,000, $60,000 a year in travel. Like, that's, I mean, where we go last year, we went to Jamaica. We went up to Boston. We went up to Italy, south Monaco. Of France, and Monaco. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Guatemala. Holy crap. That was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 trips. I mean, there again, you know, we're dropping, may not sound like a lot to some people, but, you know, for us, like I said, we're just stingy little Jews with our own money. God, please don't wait, burn me for that. But anyways, like, yeah, we don't like spending money. We're still kind of frugal. Maybe that's stemming from where we've been in the past, but that's a lot of dang money. Like just dropping, well, we probably spent more than that. We probably spent like $75,000 traveling. And Tiffany's cringing because she doesn't like letting people know about what we spend. But it's fun though, right?
It is fun.
So if somebody could sponsor you and you could travel three or four times a year, or heck, maybe once a month, pay you to flash products in front of Instagram, would you do it?
I would do it all day long.
All right,
I would
guys.
Have to get out of my comfort zone. But right. I mean, that I would have to be taught. Like, yeah. I'd have to take some classes.
Well, there you go. So anybody that's listening, Tiffany is really, really fit. You know, so anybody wants to sponsor bathing suits or anything at all, you know, let me know.
Up to try anything. If it includes travel, I'm all for it.
Yeah. And if you guys could pay for her to travel and I will get
fit. So he doesn't have to pay.
Yeah. So I don't have to pay. That'd be great. But then I can get fit too. I used to be fit like 4 years ago and then something happened. And I started drinking a little extra beer or something and started eating some fried chicken. But thus is life. All right. So let's just end with some rapid fire questions and some word associations. Here's some word associations. So basically the goal is, if I say a word, you say the first word that comes to mind.
Okay.
So real estate.
Work.
Kobe Bryant.
Sad.
Atlanta.
Hot.
Prince Harry and Meghan.
Cute.
Travel.
Joy.
All right. I hope you're okay and gentle with this one. But last but not least, Brandon Thompson.
Amazing.
All right. Well, what's your favorite book and why?
Favorite book is Redeeming Love by Francine Rivers.
Why?
It's a beautiful love story. And has great meaning.
Yeah. What's your favorite movie and why? Or documentary?
Sweet Home Alabama, because it's a beautiful love story and great meaning.
All right.
Second Chances.
Yeah. What's outside of travel, what's your favorite thing to do?
I would say spending time with our girls and watching movies. I love movies. I didn't used to love movies, but now I do.
Why?
I married a huge movie buff. I don't think I really had a choice. So now I just love movies and I love Mexican food.
Yeah. You come into this family, you're going to be a Mexican that likes to watch movies.
Yep.
Yeah, we like chips and salsa. That's part of the reason why I don't have my six pack anymore. that and some cerveza and an old neighbor named Fielder. He ever listens to this. I hope he laughs at that. But anyways, yeah. Well, what's some parting thoughts? We're 40 minutes in. What's some parting thoughts for the audience and ETC? Don't know?
I don't know.
She's shaking her head.
I'm not sure.
Okay. Well, what's your Instagram handle? Where can people find you?
Instagram handle is Tiffany Arlene Thompson.
Okay. Yep. All right. Well, thank you so much, Tiffany. Thank you for being here. I don't think you had a choice, but I appreciate it anyways.
I didn't have a choice. It wasn't as bad as I thought. So this is wonderful.
There you go. All right. See you guys next time.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Rise Above the Ashes, the podcast. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at our website at riseabovetheashes.com.